welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host and tour guide, Yada. Each weekday morning, I strive to expose the beguiling and the destructive myths which are associated with religion and with politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you listen, your eyes may be opened and you may ultimately change your mind towards many of these human institutions. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, my mission will be to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms by way of His one and only covenant and through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance, you will be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with Him. Our number for those who would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said in the next 2 hours is 877-300-7645. As you heard on the SRN news, Russia has expressed its concern over what is being called an alleged Israeli strike on Syria. Russia is saying that such a strike would be unacceptable and is in violation of the UN Charter. Well, it's amazing that Russia doesn't seem to think that it's not a violation of the UN Charter for them to be supplying weapons to the Syrian dictator so that he can mutilate tens of thousands of his people. Doesn't seem to be a violation of the UN Charter for the United States to send advanced, sophisticated weapons to the Mujahideen, to these thugs that are raping the Syrian people, and not be violating the UN Charter. It's not a violation of the UN Charter for Saudi Arabia and Qatar to turn Syria into a proxy war to serve their interest. It isn't a violation of the UN Charter for Iran to equip a terrorist group, Hezbollah, and a repulsive government in Syria with all manner of weapons, killing thousands upon thousands. But when Israel takes out a site that is designed to manufacture chemical and biological weapons, to do research on chemical and biological weapons, and several trucks that are carrying surface-to-air missiles that were intended for Hezbollah, oh, that's a great breach of the UN Charter. Now, if Russia is telling the truth, that what Israel did, which will prevent deaths, is a breach of the UN Charter, and what Russia is doing and Iran is doing and Qatar and the United States and Saudi Arabia, which are vastly increasing the deaths by the tens of thousands, then you ought to throw away the UN Charter because it's irrelevant and a moral document. Syria's army said the Israeli jets had targeted a military research center northwest of Damascus on Wednesday, killing two people and wounding five. Of course, the people they killed were doing research on chemical and biological weapons. It denied that the lorries, this is BBC, lorries would be a trailer truck, carrying the weapons was bound for Lebanon, or that was the secondary target. That's the case. The Syrian official and Iranian deputy minister have suggested that there could be retaliation. Yeah, the Syrians are fighting for their lives against their own people and jihadists from around the world, and they're going to now launch an offensive against Israel? Uh-huh, sure. The Syrian army statement about the incident carried on state media said the Israeli fighter jets had carried out a direct strike on a scientific research center. And when a regime, a dictatorial regime, has its own city surrounded, and most of the fighting now is taking place directly in the suburbs of Damascus, and maybe only has weeks, if not months, to live, but is in a stalemate in its capital city with it deploying all of its weapons against its own citizens and Muslims from around the world that are armed to the teeth with very sophisticated weapons. I don't know if you've seen the pictures, ladies and gentlemen, of the weapons being deployed by these murderous thugs that we call the Free Syrian Army. But they're no longer playing with AK-47s, missiles, anti-tank weapons and very sophisticated launching systems. They're even driving tanks. The Russian Foreign Ministry said, if this information is confirmed, then we are dealing with unprovoked attacks on targets on the territory of a sovereign country which blatantly violates the UN Charter and is unacceptable no matter the motives to justify it. You know, Russia has been out of touch with reality, has been a cancer on this globe for 100 years now. The gravest mistake the United States has made in the last century was to support Stalin and the Soviet Union under the Shinzo myth that the enemy of my enemy is my friend. It made the world far worse. Our involvement in the European theater of World War II was actually counterproductive. We left the continent worse than we found it because of what we did on behalf of the Soviet Union. And all that has happened since then is that 40 million Russians have been killed by their own government. Half the continent was enslaved. And now Russia has become fascist. Well, a good share of Israel and indeed Washington's attention is taken up about fears about Syria's chemical arsenal falling into the wrong hands. This latest airstrike underscores the fact that Israel is equally concerned about sophisticated conventional weapons being passed on to Hezbollah. Hezbollah, as you know, has not engaged in this fight. And the reason they haven't engaged in this fight is because they want their weapons to be deployed killing Jews. They want Assad to use Russian and Iranian weapons to fend for himself while Hezbollah keeps itself ready, its powder dry, to kill Jews. These weapons were intended for Hezbollah for that purpose. Some 4 years ago, the then Israeli government of Prime Minister Ehud Olmert warned that it could not tolerate what it called the game-changing weapons being transferred to Hezbollah. This Israeli operation can be seen in one sense as preemptive, but also a warning to the Syrian authorities, actually to the Iranian authorities, and to Hezbollah, that it's not going to allow either to score popularity points with the Muslim world by expanding their war to Israel. Yes, you see, the way that you become popular in any Islamic country is you attack Israel. The Quran is the most anti-Semitic book ever written. It's kind of funny, too, that when you think that, realize that Arabs are Semites, and I say that the Quran is the most anti-Semitic book ever written, but it's true. The reality is that while the principal enemy of Islam, Allah's greatest foe, is the Jews, who he slanders and says that they're monkeys and swine, and he tells Muslims, they get bonus jihad points in paradise for killing a Jew. And the most famous prophecy of Muhammad is in the last days, the rocks themselves are going to talk to Muslims and say, look, hiding behind me is a Jew, kill him. The reality is that the most prevalent victims of Islam, those killed most by the religion of Islam, those oppressed most by the religion of Islam, are Arabs. Their lives have been devastated by Islam. It is the most anti-Semitic book ever written. This from the Syrian news agency is, quote, the Zionists got ahead of themselves in trying to cover up the success of the Syrian government and the Syrian nation in maintaining the existing government and restoring stability and security. Now, just think about how stupid that is. And we've got to be honest here. Religion dumbs everybody down, but there's no more caustic religion on one's neurons than Islam. The last thing Israel wants is for Bashar Assad's government to fall. If it falls, then that country is going to be controlled by fundamentalist Muslim mujahideen that want nothing more than to take their next jihad into Israel, and they will be unrestrainable, and their arms will be sophisticated American weapons supplied through Saudi Arabia and Qatar. It's the last thing Israel wants. They don't want the Assad regime to fall. Because they recognize, just as was the case in Iraq, where they realized that Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, the fact is Saddam Hussein is better than the Iranians controlling Iraq. The same thing is true in Syria. The Syrian regime is repulsive, vicious, inhuman. But those that are fighting it are worse by any standard. Lebanese security forces, Western diplomats, and Syrian rebels say the target was the arms convoy near the Lebanon border. The Associated Press quoted a U.S. official saying that the trucks were carrying Russian-made SA-17 anti-aircraft missiles. Yes, that's just what Hezbollah needs. Russian-made anti-aircraft missiles. Now, you think, all right, with Israel, they'll use those to take down Israel's helicopters and fighter jets. But it's worse than that. Men distorted by Islam, their minds, their conscience, their hearts, their souls twisted by this religion, have proven in the past that they'll use such missiles against civilian airplanes. Israel did the world a favor. Correspondents say that Israel fears Hezbollah could obtain anti-tank and anti-aircraft missiles, thus strengthening its ability to respond to Israel airstrikes. And Israel is only going to strike if it is a preemptive strike like this one to prevent weapons like these from getting into the control of Hezbollah or to respond to a previous attack. Israel believes Syria received a battery, and Israel doesn't have to believe. Israel doesn't have to have any faith. Israel is the only country that has human intelligence embedded in the fundamentalist Islamic world. And those courageous men and women know. Israel knows that Syria received a battery of SA-17s anti-aircraft missiles from Russia. And they know that was what's in those trucks. And that's why they fought and flew that mission. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back in a moment. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. Scott, during the break, was yapping in my ear saying, can you believe it that the new moral spokesperson for the world is the Russians? I mean, the Russians that imprisoned probably 100 million of their own citizens for the crime of opposing their repulsive regime, that killed between 30 and 40 million of them, murdered them in concentration camps, that these Russians that supplied weapons to every two-bit thug and thief around the world that would impose communism on his people, that enslaved their entire country under a broken scheme where the only wealth was those who held the levers of power. That Russia, the Russia today that has replaced communism with fascism, and that any political opponent to Putin is jailed. His wealth is confiscated. The Russia today that is run by oligarchs who ended up through conning and thieving, stole the assets that were owned by the states that they now own personally. Is that Russia?
You just described a moral compass, right? That's morals, right?
Yeah, and the operation of this moral compass is on the UN Charter. You know, the very organization, when they came into Lebanon during the last time there was an open war between Hezbollah and Israel inside of Lebanon, to be the peacekeepers, and they were the primary funnel of weapons to Hezbollah. That same United Nations. The same United Nations that decided to reward the terrorists that used the mythical moniker of the Palestinians with the state status in the United Nations by a 90-plus percent margin. Those people who are so insane that they would take terrorists and give them a state based upon an overt myth. That's the map that the Russians were using. It's a great world we live in, isn't it? And, you know, most people just listen to that and they'll react to it based upon their political and religious compass, if you will. And say, yeah, yeah, boy, those Israelis, boy, they're the aggressors. In fact, right now there's being organized in one of the New York State universities a rally against Israel for the way that it deals in occupied lands. Now, why is there a rally to get the United States out of Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, California? In fact, we occupied the lands of the American Indians. Why aren't we being told to leave?
I guess I kind of look at the whole Israel situation sort of like this. I don't see them as the aggressors. I always see it like every time I read about it, it seems like somebody's trying to take something from them. They're trying to take their land, or they're trying to, you know, they're being bombarded from.
Take their lives.
We've basically surrounded them with enemies.
Correct.
And then, you know, the UN.
And we've armed their enemies.
Exactly. And,
yes.
And then the UN. They vote the mythical land.
Statehood, right. And the mythical land for the mythical people to state.
Yeah.
To wield those enemies.
Which is another attack on Israel.
Correct.
Which, that's a political attack on them. It always seems like somebody's trying to take something from them.
Yeah, it's always interesting that you've got three groups that hate Jews. The far-right fascists have almost universally hated Jews. Look at Russia as a fascist country now. Germany during World War II, fascist country. So the far right, and even the far right in America, is typically anti-Semitic. And then with all their conspiracy theories, then you've got the communists who for whatever reason, seem to hate Jews, even though communism was actually conceived by Jews. And they have declared war on Jews. And then you have Islam, which has universally rallies around the claim that we need to destroy Israel and kill every Jew. And then you even got fundamentalist Christianity, which was born out of hatred for Jews. You've got Paul, who was Jewish, telling Christians that their great enemy were Jews.
Well, that tells you a lot right there.
What is the one thing that distinguishes these Jews, with the real word is Yehudim, means related to Yah. What is the one thing that distinguishes them from all other people so that all of these human institutions would hate them? They were Yah's messengers.
Yeah.
They're his chosen people. And so when you see a group of people, or if you yourself are antagonistic towards Yehudim, towards Yisrael, to the promised land and the chosen people, then who are you also opposed to? The one and only God? Your only source of life? The only hope there is for humankind? Not a good place to be. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'd like to switch gears ever so slightly. We're going to move to a different location, but still in the world corrupted by Islam. This is a story that says that one of the Islamist groups, during the SRN news this morning, the newscaster tripped all over his tongue. The term Islamist has been used now to distinguish a fundamentalist Muslim terrorist, a jihadist, from an average Muslim. They're, rather than calling them just Muslims now, they're calling them Islamists, so they don't have to say radical or extremist, but he, just for double protection, said Islamist extremist groups. They're not extremists, and Islamist is only correct if you realize that what he's talking about is Islamic Jihad, Islamic Mujahideen, Muslim terrorists, is what we're talking about here. Anyway, one of these Islamist groups fighting in Northern Mali has split and wants dialogue. A statement from the breakaway faction says, the Islamic movement for Aswad. Now, Aswad is a place in Mali, and so, but their name is the Islamic Movement, and now they're splitting away from Ansar Dine. Now, mind you, that the gentleman who is now leading the splinter group, Al Ghasbas Ag Intala, was a Ansar Dine commander. Now, beyond that, we've done stories on Ansar Dine before, and I think everyone listening to this program has heard me explain what Ansar is. Ansar are the friends of, the supporters of, in Islam. Dine is the religion. So he's left the friends of the religion to start a movement called the Islamic Movement for Aswad. Yesterday, a friend who listens to this program regularly sent me a video, and if this weren't radio and were instead television, I would show you the video. It's 5 minutes long, but it is the kind of video that just causes your blood to boil. There was a British-accented woman who had followed the French troops into the city of Gao in Mali and was reporting on what had taken place there. The soccer stadium in the center of the city had been turned into a big sign to the Center for Sharia. And it was there that countless African Mali citizens, who were Muslims, by the way, were mutilated. They had hands and feet cut off on opposite sides. Quran 5:33. I shared that verse with you yesterday. They were beheaded, decapitated. That's also part of the Quran's jurisprudence. And they were tortured. And in this building, it used to be a court building in the town, they had their Sharia courts. They had all of the documents associated with Sharia law all spread out there, where they had brought in countless women and beaten them, cut them severely, mutilated them for not wearing the hijab, not wearing the veil. And men, they would cut for and decapitate, cut off arms and legs for smoking. And what was really interesting about this whole thing, I mean, not only did you see these individuals that had been mutilated, women had been mutilated, men who were showing, partial limbs mutilated, and then this compound and all of these Sharia documents, and it just causes you to hate Islam. And if you don't hate Islam, then you're either grotesquely ignorant, hopelessly ignorant, or you're grotesquely immoral. If you do not hate the religion of Islam, if you do not despise it with every fiber of your body, then you aren't civil. You aren't rational. You aren't informed. You're incapable of exercising any prudent moral judgment. When you see what these fundamentalist Muslims did in the territories that they had conquered in Mali, it's got to make your blood boil, because what they were imposing is fundamentalist Islamic law, Sharia, which is based upon Muhammad. And they were pure hypocrites. They would cut off a man's hand for smoking when they make money by smuggling cigarettes. They would kill a man for drug use when they make their money smuggling drugs, producing drugs. They would kill a man for homosexuality when they pull young boys out of their families' homes and systematically rape them. Islam is the most repulsive, most caustic, most demented and perverted doctrine ever conceived by humankind. Now, here, you know, it's so difficult. You know, you realize so temporarily, some people have been spared from the onslaught of fundamentalist Islam. But it's only temporary because the French are not at war with Islam. They're only at war with Islamic terrorists. And so from one town, they temporarily remove them, but the French aren't going to stay there forever. They'll come back, and they'll be as ruthless as ever when they return. It's the same thing about Afghanistan. Yes, the United States liberated some towns from the Taliban who were equally savage in their application of fundamentalist Islam, but America is not going to stay there forever. And when America leaves, the Taliban returns, and they will be as savage as they were before. It will be as if we had never been there, with exception of all of the blood and coin we spilled. But it is tragic. Anyway, this story is about the Islamic movement for Azawad separating itself from the Ansar Din, which are the friends of the religion, and they say they want dialogue because they said that they aren't linked to Al-Qaeda Islamists, and they say we are not foreigners. We don't want to turn Mali into a terrorist state, and yet the Ansar Din was influential in the imposition of Sharia law and the torture of the citizens there. What's also interesting there is we witnessed by listening to the voices of those who had been abused the exact same thing that took place in the Sudan. In the Sudan, fundamentalist Arab Muslims are in control of the Sudan, and they systematically attacked and murdered 2.5 million African animists and Christians, and then when they overhunted African animists and Christians, they turned their attention on killing African Muslims. Racism abounds in Islam. The same thing was true here. The Arab Muslims were torturing and beheading and flogging, mutilating African Muslims. If a Arab Muslim was caught doing anything that was opposed to Sharia, no problem. If an African was, well, the consequences were hellish. Islam judges things based on the color of an individual's skin, based on their race. For the past 10 months, three main Islamist groups have controlled northern Mali, where they have imposed strict Islamic law. It was a five-minute video. It's seen it. We'll tell you everything you need to know about what happens when strict Islamic law is imposed, as it has been most recently in Egypt. And it will be imposed in Syria, should the United States' supply of weapons to the Mujahideen there prevail. Along with secular Tuareg rebels, they took advantage of the chaos after a military coup to extend the influence into a wider area of the Sahara Desert. Yes, when fundamentalist Muslims were empowered in Libya, it was all that needed to occur for this to transpire. And it's the weapons that were supplied by the United States through Qatar into Libya that empowered this conquest of Mali. And so the Islamists began to take control of major towns. The Islamist Movement for Azawad statement said that its group was made up entirely of Malians, those from Mali, who wanted a peaceful resolution to the crisis. Now, they want to impose a Sharia law, but without anybody shooting at them. The IMA said that the Malian authorities and the French need to stop the hostilities so that they are given the opportunity to control the region. He told the agency that his organization was not linked to Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, nor to the Movement for Unity and Jihad in West Africa. Boy, what a great name. The Movement for Unity and Jihad. Sounds so swell. And, of course, you know, we're told that jihad is a personal struggle. So for unity and for personal struggle against racial hatred in Africa, what a lovely group. Why don't we send them weapons, too? We are a group of people from the north of Mali who have a set of grievances that date back 50 years when Mali became independent. We are not terrorists. We are ready to negotiate. Oh, yeah. Well, look at their Sharia courts and what they did when they were in control of these areas. They were ruthless thugs, murderous, torturous, sadistic. Meanwhile, Mali's army has been accused. This is interesting, of course. It's the same thing that happened in Afghanistan. Mali's army has been accused of carrying out a series of summary executions. So when the French go in, they liberate a town, the Malian army comes in after the French have liberated the town, and the Malian army is as ruthless as the Muslims they have replaced. It's the same thing that's going on in Niger now. In so many other places in the world. People have been raised in such a way that they're incapable of exercising good moral judgment. The BBC's Mark Doyle in Mali says the reports that the Malian army, drawn largely from the south, has targeted Arabs and Tuaregs from the north to expose a racial aspect to the war, which has been hidden by the emphasis on Western troops fighting the war against Islamic insurgents. You know, the reason that the Africans in the southern part of the country want to slaughter the Arabs and the Tuaregs in the north is because the Arabs and the Tuareg in the north are slaughtering and torturing and beheading and raping Africans, just as they did in the Sudan.
So again, they're protecting themselves. Would you want to be around anybody like that?
You know, it kind of reminds me of in a small microcosm of what happened in Bosnia when the Croats, which were Roman Catholics, and the Bosnian Muslims who joined the Hitler and became members of the SS, opened up concentration camps and they killed 800,000 Syrian Christians. And then when they continued to, even after the war, to terrorize the Syrian Christians, and the Syrian Christians finally said, you know, I've had enough of this, and they swiped back and started to fight the Bosnian Muslims, that the world came down on the Syrian Christians and bombed them and accused them of being terrorists. Yeah, it's not hard to see why somebody who has been systematically the victim of genocide might strike back. Now, this is going to be a radical shift in thought. We had opening segment was focused on pummeling the Russians for their pathetic behavior. This story came out of Russia. It's probably 2 or 3 days old, but I'm going to go into troubled waters here. Hope that I can survive this plunge into troubled waters and share with you a story that I found interesting in Russia. It begins. The Russian parliament has backed a ban on the promotion of homosexuality among children in its first reading amid scuffles on the streets outside. Police made arrests outside the State Duma in Moscow after gay rights supporters planning a kiss-in were assaulted by opponents. The bill echoes laws passed by Russian cities such as St. Petersburg, the old Leningrad. Human rights campaigner Alexeeva. Now, if you're pro homosexuality, mind you, you're a human rights campaigner. Said that the real aim is to curb the rights of sexual minorities. A sexual minority. That's a really an odd thought, isn't it? You're a sexual minority, not based upon your gender. You know, it would be a sexual minority, for example, if you're a guy, you're a sexual minority because there are more women on the planet than there are guys because women live longer. So, he's using sexual preference the rights of minorities. So what's interesting here is what the Russians did, they didn't say that homosexuality is illegal. They're not trying to change people's proclivity. They said that the promotion of homosexuality among children was illegal, which would mean that the U.S. school system would be committing a crime because the U.S. school system, from grammar school all the way up through through college, literally works, has clubs and has school-wide events designed to promote homosexuality. They're not designed to ensure that homosexuals are not targeted for any reason. They're designed to promote homosexuality. It's considered a badge of honor for somebody to wear a T-shirt or to march in a parade that promotes homosexuality. And that's my issue. I don't care if you're square, if you're round, if you're black, if you're green, if you're a guy and prefer guys, if you're a girl and prefer girls, I don't care. What you choose to do is your choice. Don't care who you are is your doing. Don't care. I don't care that somebody's a Muslim. I don't care that somebody's a Christian. I don't care that somebody's a Buddhist. God doesn't care either, by the way. The issue is not what you choose to do with your life, so long as your life doesn't infringe on other people's rights to do what they wish to do. You can't go off and kill them. You can't go off and rob them, because now you're infringing other people's lives. But what you choose to do that doesn't influence others is just fine. The issue the Russians have is the same issue that I have. Is promoting something which is abnormal as not only being normal, but being good. I mean, less than 2% of the world's population is homosexual. 2% versus 98%, it is abnormal. If there was a definition of abnormal, 2% versus 98% would be abnormal. It's abnormal. When you promote abnormal as being not only normal, but good, that is a perversion. Don't do that. So, as I say, I don't care what you do, and the Russians aren't saying, we don't care if you're homosexual, just don't indoctrinate our children with this notion that it is not only normal, but it's preferred. And that is really what's being done in American universities, is what these folks, the human rights campaigner, wants to do here. And the reason, by the way, they want to do it, and the President of the United States, by the way, is in this camp. The reason they want to do it is socialist secular humanism. They are human rights campaigners, after all. The socialist secular humanism is based on a replacement moral code that is the antithesis of Yahweh's moral code. Yahweh's moral code is based upon the family of men and women coming together as husband and wife in a faithful relationship, in a supportive relationship to conceive life and to raise their children, to help them grow, to support them, to uplift them, to teach them about the covenant, so that they all understand how the family relates to God's ultimate objective, which is the covenant. And, of course, homosexuality undermines all of that, which is why God is opposed to it. But don't get out of whack, fundamentalist religious types, because it is a minor hiccup amongst the things that God is opposed to. Religion, he is far more opposed to than he is to homosexuality. But an interesting story, nonetheless. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of young...